start with a semi-arid region, add Oregon's largest freshwater lake, drain it with a river, add multiple dams, and you have the Klamath Basin in a nutshell. If only its issues and the solutions to them could be expressed in such brevity as well. The water from the Klamath and its tributaries is overpromised, more promises than water to fulfill obligations to farmers, to fish, to wildlife, and of course the problem is more acute in drought years like this one. This year does feature dry conditions, but it also features a new agreement between water users. The agreement needs federal legislation to have the force of law, and that legislation has been introduced in the U.S. Senate, with both California senators and both Oregon senators signing on. One of the signatories to the deal, the Karuk Tribe. Craig Tucker is the Klamath coordinator for the Karuk Tribe and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Craig, welcome back to the Exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me, and happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. It does get a little hard, as you're probably aware, to follow all the activity over Klamath Basin water over time. So what, for example, is the current status of the older agreements, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, or KBRA, and the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, or KHSA?
Well, as you may remember, back in 2010, we signed those agreements up in Salem with great fanfare. But we really didn't address all the issues that needed to be addressed in order for things to move forward politically. And so Senator Ron Wyden called for a legislative task force last year and challenged us to reduce the cost of the agreements, of implementing the agreements, and to effectively make the tent larger. How can we get more Southern Oregon irrigators involved and on board? And so that's what we've spent the last year or so doing, and that's what led to this Upper Klamath Comprehensive Agreement. So now we have three interrelated agreements that address water use issues in the Upper Klamath, Lower Klamath, fisheries restoration issues from stem to stern along the Klamath River. And we think now we have enough parties on board and supporting this agreement that we can take it back to D.C. and actually pass legislation.
All right, so we can add to the alphabet soup. We had KBRA, we had KHSA, now we have the UKBCA, the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement. And yeah. So the part that this one brought in then is more participation from water users of the upper basin, basically the tributaries to Upper Klamath Lake?
Yeah, there's in Southern Oregon, in the Klamath, there are irrigators, farmers, ranchers that are affiliated with the Bureau of Reclamation's Klamath Project. And that's about a 250,000-acre project, several hundred family farms involved. And so a lot of the early negotiations were with those guys. But upstream of them, along the Williamson, Sprague, and Wood River Valleys, there's another group of water users that are not affiliated with the Bureau of Reclamation's project. And to a large degree, they were simply not as involved in the process. So what we've done now, and there's an outstanding about a 40-year-old water rights battle that's been ongoing between a lot of those water users and the Klamath Tribes of Oregon. And so what we're trying to do is have that water rights dispute resolved through these agreements.
So is the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement intended to dovetail with the older agreements, essentially complement them, not supersede them, right?
That's right. And they're all sort of interrelated, and that's by design. You know, we've got folks up and down the Klamath River who have a pretty long history of fighting with each other, and all of a sudden here we are trying to work together and collaborate. You know, but everybody's pretty nervous, and everybody has bargained for benefits that you know, serve the needs of their constituencies. So for us downriver, we're really interested in the pieces of the agreements that restore the salmon fishery. If you're an irrigator, you're into pieces of the agreement that make sure you have a secure allocation of water. And so we've made these agreements, we've interconnected the agreement so that, you know, when the water security comes, you know, the fisheries restoration comes, it all happens together.
Craig, are there percentages? I mean, you obviously can't know year by year what amount of water is going to be available in the Klamath Basin, and certainly this year and last, it hasn't been much. I mean, does it ultimately get down to numbers? Are the agreements that specific about things like there will be this many cubic feet per second of water coming down the Klamath at this point and this date?
Yeah, well, some of that is controlled by the agreements. And some of it will still be controlled by basically the Endangered Species Act, especially in the bad years like this one. there are minimal flow requirements to meet the needs of ESA-listed coho salmon, and minimal volumes of water that have to be in Upper Klamath Lake to meet the needs of endangered suckers. But those are, you know, those are like the bad years, the dry years. In most years, these agreements sort of lay out an allocation of water for ag that secures enough water in the system, in the river, and in the lake to support wildlife. But it'd be a dependable supply of water for agriculture, because I think what's really been problematic for the agricultural community is this water insecurity. And it seems like, you know, every year there's, whether it's competing science dictating what the flows are, or maybe a new political administration back in D.C., you know, changing what the flows and the water available for irrigation is. We're trying to set up a system that is durable year in and year out, and provide some predictability for the irrigation community, so they can, you know, these guys have to go to the bank and get loans in order to, you know, get the materials to plant their crops and farm their cows. So we're trying to have a long-term water security for those guys, just like we want long-term water security for the folks that depend on salmon.
So it would potentially be predictability, but in some seasons, drier seasons, certainly at a lower level. I mean, but there's no assured amount of water here, though, is there? I mean, they could still be shut off, some of them.
Well, and there are years like this one. I mean, this is one of the driest years on record. And in years like this, it's like we're all suffering together. And it's a rough year if you're a cattle rancher, but it's also going to be a very rough year if you're a salmon, someone depends on the salmon, because, you know, whether you farm or not, you know, the lakes and the rivers are really low this year, and there are just going to be times where Mother Nature doesn't provide.
Craig Zucker is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Klamath Basin water issues from end to end, stem to stern, from ocean to the Upper Klamath Lake and its tributaries. He is the Klamath coordinator for the Karuk tribe, and you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. You might have a few questions as things have gotten a lot more complicated over the years with Klamath Basin water issues. Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So with this latest agreement, again, the UKBCA, the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement, which again dovetails with the older KBRA, KHSA, have now all the water users had a chance to participate?
I don't think I could definitively or say all, but I'm confident that the majority of farmers in southern Oregon who irrigate with Klamath River water or in the Klamath River watershed has had an opportunity to participate.
All right. There were lots of good feelings, obviously, at the signing ceremony out there a few weeks ago. We had the Karuk tribe. We had water users groups. There were fishing and environmental groups, the governor of Oregon, both senators for the state of Oregon. But there were still protests on that day from Klamath tribal members. So, obviously, still some resistance. Not everybody thinks that the UKBCA is a great idea.
Well, you know, it's really not surprising. I mean, this is really bold. It's a giant change, and I think it's not surprising that you know, even with parties who are at the table, there are constituents with, you know, whether you're a tribe or an irrigation district, there are folks who don't like the agreements. But, you know, the Klamath tribes had a vote among their general membership to support the agreements. You know, the tribes downstream, the councils are democratically elected, and they voted to support the agreements. And there's similar structure for the irrigation districts, where they elect their leaders as well. So, you know, it's not unanimous among everybody, but I don't think that's surprising. But I think the majority of folks within all these groups are strong supporters of the agreements.
So are you saying that the Klamath tribal leadership actually is on record as supporting the agreement, just some members of the tribe don't?
That's correct.
All right. Understood. It seems like it was about a month after that agreement signing for, again, the I'm going to say this a lot because it takes some getting used to, the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement, or UKBCA. About a month after that was signed, you got the introduction of federal legislation. What is that legislation intended to do?
It implements the three agreements. So some of the programs in the agreements require new congressional authorities. For example, the dam removal piece, the Secretary of the Interior is called on to make a determination as to whether or not dam removal is in the public interest. Well, for the Secretary to make that determination, Congress has authorized that. Similarly, there's transfers of lands from Pacific Corps to federal agencies for dam removal. There's a power program. One of the issues, an interesting issue, is when these dams were originally built, part of the deal with the company who built them, and at the time it was called the California Oregon Power Company,
COPCO,
was to give a cheap power rate to irrigators in the region. And that lasted for nearly 100 years before that contract expired. And so these guys were about to see their power rates go up in some cases as much as 1,200%, which has made farming up there very difficult. So these programs also used will federal power to these irrigators and provide an affordable power rate to keep them competitive with other agricultural producers in the region.
All right, but the major point here, then, again, with the dam part of it, is that the Secretary of Interior doesn't actually have the power to make a decision, and there's lots of paperwork in front of the Secretary of Interior with the ability to make that decision based on lots of information, but simply needs to have Congress say, yes, you can make this. That's one of the major switches in this legislation, it sounds like.
That is correct.
So without the passage of the legislation, then, the agreements are just agreements in principle?
Yeah, well, there's some things in the agreements that don't require new congressional authorities, but a lot of that's the planning work that's going into the fish restoration plan, for example. You know, those are things we're already working on, some of these bits and pieces, but to really make these agreements work and to restore both the ecology of the Klamath River and the economies of these small communities that depend on it, we're going to need an act of Congress.
Is there now basically a shelf full of documents available on the Klamath? I mean, it seems like between the three agreements, which are fairly thick themselves, and then all the other work that has gone into things like figuring out whether the four dams on the Klamath River should come out, seems like there's probably at least a shelf full of documentation about this by now.
Yeah, or a hard drive full in our case. If you went to klamathrestoration.gov, that's really the site that's sort of a clearinghouse for all those documents. I mean, there's over 8,000 pages of technical analysis that's gone into this process and developing the fisheries restoration pieces. It's really comprehensive and it's huge. And I think part of the reason why we've been so methodical with the analysis is we do know this is going to be controversial. We're talking about restoring a watershed that's larger than five U.S. states. So, there's probably going to be somebody somewhere along the way that's going to be unhappy and consider litigation. So we want the decisions that we're making to be legally defensible. That means having the best available science and analysis to support these decisions.
All right. Well, that certainly explains why you want to make sure that you got lots of stuff to back you up. Now, the whole process of legislating, though, I mean, it really doesn't matter what kind of evidence-based processes you've been through. It really is about political issues now. So you have the two senators from California, the two senators from Oregon supporting this legislation. Given the realities of Congress and the fact that it's an election year, I mean, what do the prospects look like just in the Senate?
Well, we think we have pretty reasonable shot here. Our agreement, I always refer to it as being politically agnostic, and that's to say that this isn't something that's clearly of benefit to liberals or conservatives or Democrats or Republicans. This is really about benefiting all the rural communities up and down the Klamath. And, the politics of it is, upstream folks tend to be more conservative, downstream folks tend to be more liberal. But you have groups from both ends of the basin supporting this agreement. So I think what we're trying to demonstrate is, this is bipartisan. And because of that, we think we have a legitimate shot to go to D.C. and get the political support we need from Congress.
Again, Craig Tucker, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Klamath coordinator for the Karuk Tribe. We're talking about Klamath Basin water issues, the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement, signed not very long ago, and now the legislation introduced in the U.S. Senate to make this happen, which is meant to implement not only the most recent agreement, but also the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and the Klamath Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, email jx@jeffnet.org. Is this just standalone legislation at this point? It seems like if it's going to get connected to something else, it'll happen much later in the process. At this point, is it just legislation dealing with the Klamath Basin, Craig?
Yeah, at this point, it's simply the implementation of these agreements. You know, they always talk about passing legislation like sausage making.
Mm-hmm.
And so undoubtedly, there'll be some sausage making between here and by the time we get to the finish line. But, you know, the tribes, the conservation groups, the irrigation districts, everyone who's involved, you know, we're working together and we're collaborating back in D.C. together. And so I think you'll see us shepherd this through. As a group.
When you talk about some of the signatories to this and the other agreements, I mean, given the history, and this does go back a very long way, obviously, I mean, is it still somewhat surprising to think about all the people and the faces and the names you've managed to bring together, and the agencies for that matter, at one table to be able to talk about this?
Well, I think this doesn't get talked about enough. You know, I'm, as you might be able to tell from my accent, I'm not from this area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a member of the Karuk tribe, but I work for the Karuk tribe. And I think it's easy for an outsider to show up and say, hey, you know, you guys, you need to listen to one another, you need to collaborate with one another, and if we work together, we can solve the problem. I think it was easy for an outsider to say, but when you really learn the history of the Klamath and how just vitriolic and bitter some of the history has been, it was pretty amazing to see these farmers, ranchers, tribal members, and salmon fishermen sitting at the table and setting aside decades or even a century of conflict and learning how to work together. And that's really what we've done. And I think we're setting an example for the country. I mean, I think if you go back in D.C., the kind of nasty, bitter, partisan fighting we see in Congress, I think it's been disappointing to a majority of Americans. You know, okay, we have a lot of disagreements. We have a lot of different worldviews. In the day, we're all in this thing together, and we better learn to work together if we're going to survive. And I think that's what folks on the ground here in the Klamath have decided, and they've set aside differences in order to do that.
Now, I know when the task force that led to the Upper Klamath Basin Agreement came together last summer and fall, one of the things that got it together was Senator Ron Wyden saying the price tag is simply too high for the existing agreement. So is there a dollar figure attached to the legislation that was just introduced by Wyden, Boxer, Merkley, and Feinstein?
Yeah, we reduced the cost of implementation by about a third. And so we're looking at about a $500 million over 15 years investment in the Klamath, which I would argue is a bargain. I mean, if you think how enormous the Klamath Basin is, how economically valuable it is to the West Coast, both in agricultural production as well as fisheries, it's a really good investment. And if we don't do something to fix the Klamath, we'll see what we've seen in the last couple of decades, where it's either a farm disaster or a fisheries disaster, one after another. And, you know, there's a price tag to that as well. And so we think we're investing in a long-term solution.
Let us take a call. Here's Ann and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Craig Tucker, the Klamath Coordinator for the Karuk Tribe.
Thank you. Two things come to me. One of the things is the increasing age of American farmers. And another thing is that the Klamath Basin water rights are severely oversubscribed. Has there been any movement to buy water rights from aging farmers and, you know, giving them some retirement money and at the same time then retiring those water rights so that we get the subscription on Klamath waters down to a more realistic level?
You start reducing the demands. Good point. Thanks for that, Ann. Appreciate it. Craig?
Yeah, that's actually one of the purposes of the Upper Klamath Comprehensive Agreement is we need to increase the inflow into Upper Klamath Lake, which is the headwaters of the river. And so the agreement laid out the goal of retiring 30,000 acre feet of water use. And so it would be done with willing sellers. It could be a combination of easements bought from landowners or simply purchase of lands. So that is one of the principles of the agreements, and I think parties did appreciate the fact that what you say is true, that the water rights are oversubscribed in terms of supporting both a healthy fishery and a healthy agricultural community.
So we have this legislation introduced in the Senate. It's in committee now. It doesn't sound like it's even gotten a hearing yet. Is there similar legislation introduced in the House? Has Greg Walden, whose district includes the upper headwaters of the Klamath Basin, gotten involved?
Greg Walden is actually one of the conveners of the legislative task force that we had last year. We will have our Senate hearing is actually tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So we will have a hearing tomorrow, and you know, depending on how things go and how things move in the Senate, I expect there to be some interest in introducing a House bill sometime this year. I know my congressman here on the north coast of California, Jared Huffman, has expressed quite a bit of interest in being part of that effort. So, you know, we think we're going to take it one step at a time, one hearing at a time, and try to build some momentum as we go.
All right, so hearing tomorrow before a Senate committee on the Klamath Basin legislation, which is meant to implement the newest agreement, the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement, and the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, KBRA, and the KHSA, the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. Alphabet soup, but a lot going on to try to make sure that the waters in the Klamath Basin no longer overpromised. Craig Tucker is the Klamath Coordinator for the Karuk Tribe. Craig, thanks again for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so impressed with your ability to get all that alphabet soup correct.
That's just the one stumble. Thanks for that. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We will talk about wilderness and wilderness preservation in hour number two coming up.